This is Josh Reeves, and you're listening to the Mile High Church Podcast. Hey, have you ever noticed when you let something go, it works out? That's part of the spiritual practice of The Power of Surrender, written by Coop Blackson and coming to Mile High Church to speak on April 26th, in person or online. Learn more at milehighchurch.org.
Today, I'm here to bring a message inviting us to activate our worship circuit. And so I went looking, researching about different ways that people worship and different things that people worship. And I found some surprising things that I want to share, the most surprising ones to me here at the top of this message. The first one is that it was interesting to read that in 350 before the Common Era, the Greeks considered their hospitals their temples, because if you were ill, you would go to the temple to pray for the gods to heal you. They didn't have necessarily medicine. They might have used tinctures, but healing, physical healing, was very much connected to being favored by the gods for them. And so that was a hospital. And I found that really, really fascinating to read. I also read that in ancient times, cats were believed to be gods. And I don't think they've forgotten that, right? No. So that continues on today. Also, one of my favorites, I'm a big fan of the Egyptian culture, but I'd never heard this. Did you know that for many years, Egyptians worshipped cabbage? Cabbage. I know you can like cabbage, but worship cabbage? That was a hard one to understand. I tried to dig more into that one. I couldn't figure it out. It was kind of sour. Ha ha. Yeah, so I didn't really like that one very much. But I did find something that did please me about why we have this desire to worship. Pastor Carrie Schmidt says to us, the fact that human beings all over the planet Earth intuitively worship something is proof that God has written this in our hearts. It's part of our spiritual genetics. And if we think back to how we've evolved, we can hear stories and see stories and cultural experiences that have occurred in all parts of the human experience where we have felt this need, whether it was to worship the gods of the weather, lightning or the sun, to worship the parts of nature, the trees and Mother Earth, to find ways to worship is activating something in us that we yearn for. Now, if we look up some of the definitions that have to do with worship, we come up with things like the feeling or expression of reverence or adoration, often for a deity or for God. And so it's often been associated with spirituality, but it also can be part of the customs and rituals of everyday life of the non-religious, the non-spiritual inclined. And so worship is something that is important, I think, to us. For me, worship has always been about rediscovery of some holy place within me that I intuited when I was very young, and I bet many of us have a similar story. I was drawn to church around the age of 5. I didn't know what it was, but I had a little friend who told me that she went to this place on Sundays, and she told me a little bit about it, and it sounded interesting, so I asked my parents if I could go. And they let me go, and I became a lifelong churchgoer. But what I find for myself is I'm kind of an unconditional churchgoer. I don't really care what's going on in the church. I don't care what faith tradition it is. I don't care what kind of music they have. I don't care whether it aligns with what I believe or not. I find that wherever I go to something called church or temple or some spiritual ceremony, I always find something that feeds me. And I continue to this day to be a pretty unconditional churchgoer. I don't care here who the speaker is. I don't care who's singing. I don't care what I know is going on. And I know often every detail of what's going to happen in the service. I'm still here with absolute faith that no matter what happens, my worship circuit is going to get activated somehow. So I'm here. And I know many of you are like that. Our friend Pat is like that, was like that. She was here every Sunday, no matter what, because she believed that. And that works. And many of us feel that way about nature. We go out in nature. Some of us say, I have to be out in nature. And whether it's we're unconditionally connected to nature, doesn't matter if it's a sunny day or a cloudy day or a windy day or a rainy day or a sunny day. I'm out there for my walk. I'm out there experiencing nature. I'm an unconditional worshiper of Mother Earth and the weather. We all have those places where we feel something within us is inspired and activated and uplifted when we allow ourselves to be present to it. So that's my definition of worship. And yet, I think that the activation of that circuit can also get out of center if we let it. That our collective and individual human experience can cause us to seek ways to activate that center that don't really work for us, that we think might work for us. And so we might repeatedly or even habitually go there, but they don't really work. In the definition of worship is also included the notion that worship comes from the old English term and the old English word of value or worth. Thus, it indicates the courtesy of reverence paid to. So I invite us to consider today, what is it you value more than anything else? What is of importance to you? Because what we know, since this circuit is somewhat of a natural propensity for us, what we begin to value, even if it doesn't really serve us ultimately, often becomes what we end up worshiping. And so we have to stop and ask ourselves frequently, daily, what's important to me? What do I value? What really matters to me? And am I living my life in alignment with what I say is important to me? Because I recognize that when I do that, I more effectively activate that natural circuit that all humans have shared and that all humans have, that is that call back to center. That call back to the divine church that resides within our own heart, within our own soul, within our own essence. And I think we can get caught up sometimes in some, what I'm calling dysfunctional worship today. So I want to start there, inviting us to pay attention to any way that we might be practicing dysfunctional worship, thinking we're activating the circuit, but often missing the mark. Here are some of those things. There are a lot of them. I only have enough time to speak to some of them. You might have your own, but here are the more common ones in my estimation. The first one is the dysfunctional worship of the past. The good old days. Back before COVID, you know, we used to all sit next to each other in church or whatever it might be. Back in the good old days, people used to do this. And it's fine to hearken back to the past and remember the past. And absolutely, the past has its lessons for us and its remembrances for us. But if what we value and talk about and hear ourselves talking about to people all the time is how things used to be, we might be trying to activate a circuit of worship of a time long gone. And it doesn't allow us to be in the now. As I was contemplating this, what I kept thinking about is, imagine if I got in my car this morning and drove here to Mile High Church the whole time with my eyes in the rearview mirror. I don't think I'd get here safely. I think I'd probably run into something or someone. I don't think I would have made it to my destination. And when we're worshiping the past, when we're stuck in the past, when our estimation of life is that the past was so much better, we are driving our life with our eyes in the rearview mirror and we're not present in the now moment. And what I know about authentic, powerful activation of that worship circuit is that it happens in the now moment. We must make ourselves available to the now moment for the full benefit of it. So we have to allow ourselves to enjoy our memories and be fine with them, but not attached to them and not worship them as that was better than this, or we're missing it. We're missing the opportunity. The world of effects is the next one. The world of effects, the things in my life, sometimes falling into a worship of what I have, where I live, what I've got, the job I have, the career I have, even the stuff that I have, and clinging to it, even though my life might be calling me to some new experience or new opportunity, or I've shifted into a new way of being, struggling with hanging on to my stuff. Hanging on to my house, hanging on to the things that I think are really important, and worshiping that stuff without a recognition that wherever I go is where my heart is and my memories are and my presence is and my opportunity to worship and be connected is activated no matter where I am. And so it's an opportunity to let go of the clingy, worshipy energy of stuff. I also think that in this category sometimes includes substances. Those of us who struggled with worshiping at the altar of addiction, with alcohol or substance abuse or food or sex or even chocolate. I hate to say it, chocolate. To go back and back and back to that stuff in the hopes of having pleasure, in the hopes of feeling better, in the hopes of missing out on the pain that we're experiencing somehow by ingesting a substance that we think will make us better. That's the addictive pattern when we're out of alignment with our worship circuit. And so many of the programs that call people back to sobriety have contained within them a rewirement to what really matters, to where the center of us really resides, to what the true nature of the divine really is, and to disconnect the circuit within us that thinks that stuff out there is my God. That stuff out there is my Savior. That will give me the most pleasure. And we find that we can rediscover a deeper walk with our own inner worship circuit when we surrender and no longer see or use that substance in that way. It's not that the substance is bad. All is God. It's how we are using it and what we are intending it for. It's not that the stuff of the world is bad, the houses and the cars and the trinkets and the clothes. And it's not that it's bad. It's how we get attached to it that doesn't serve us in this deep craving within us. And other people can sometimes become a challenge for us. We can worship the ground that other people walk on. I know that it's Valentine's Day this week, and I do want to acknowledge that and say that when it comes to Valentine's Day and romantic relationships, sometimes the mental equivalent we have for that is that I or the person I love should worship me. I'm so glad Ken's not here because he should worship me, don't you think? I mean, so this is for everyone but Ken Christman, all right? And so should worship me, put me up on a pedestal, and if they don't, that they don't really love me or something is wrong. We do this to our lovers and loved ones. We do this to our family and friends. We put people up on these pedestals and think that how I show my love is I worship them and I agree with everything they say and I just absolutely surrender my power to them and I let them be the expert. And we even do this to people we don't even know. We worship celebrities and sports figures and we allow ourselves to lose our own energy, even giving up time and energy to the worship of them. I only worship Matthew McConaughey that way. Hubba hubba. Yeah, good choice. Thank you, Catherine. I agree, yeah. So it's about bringing people off of that pedestal. What we get to realize when we're worshiping people that way is that we're removing their humanity from them. And we're not really experiencing that connection in oneness with them. Because here's the truth about every person that you or I may admire, think is wonderful, want to put up on a pedestal, that whether we know them personally or not, is that they are human. They are great and magnificent, and they are filled with flaws and foibles, and they've made mistakes. And so when we connect with each other at that human level, at that connecting level, and allow ourselves to pull people off of those pedestals and return our energy to ourselves, we gain some energy. Since it's Super Bowl Sunday, I just have to say Taylor Swift. I appreciate Taylor. I don't know her music very well, but here's what really fascinated me about this conversation. So Taylor Swift, beautiful music artist, written many songs, is dating Travis Kelce, who's a football player on the Kansas City Chiefs, and she's been there watching, and so they have showed her a few times, and there's all this conversation. And here's what got me. When it became clear that the Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl, all the Swifties who are Taylor's fans began theorizing, how was Taylor going to get from Japan to Las Vegas? And they plotted her flights for her, and they figured out how much jet lag she was going to have and what mood she'd be in. I'm like, I don't have time for that. That's a little too much right there. I get that you are fans, but see, these are the ways that sometimes we give our power away, our energy away, our time and energy. I trust Taylor Swift. If she wants to be there, she'll find her own darn way to Las Vegas. So I let her go and hope that they have a good time. I'm not going to say who I hope wins. I saw a wonderful meme that said that for ministers, Sunday church is like our Super Bowl, so that you should be pouring Gatorade over our heads on Super Bowl Sunday. So I told the first service to please watch out. I don't want anybody doing that. You need to warn me if they do that, all right? Okay, thank you. So we get to allow ourselves to anchor into the truth of beings and people. And one of the last ones here today, God out there. We've had a propensity as humans to believe the gods or God out there needs us to worship. We've anthropomorphized God, which means we place our beliefs about what the deity, the creator of all, wants upon it. So because we struggle to forgive, we believe God has a struggle with forgiveness. Because we have a struggle letting go of our anger, we might believe that God has a hard time letting go of anger. So we believe this, and then our teaching, many of the teachings have a notion of a separate God. And they're beautiful teachings. As I said, I'm unconditionally available for all the faith traditions. And for me, I don't resonate with that separate God and that notion that God created us and that we are inferior to it, giving us sort of a spiritual esteem issue. I heard a fun story about a minister who was preaching one day in a church, and he began his prayer with, "Dear Lord," and he was really loud, and he had this rapturous look on his face, and I want to get what he said. "Without you, we are but dust." And a little five-year-old girl, probably like our sweet little Nancy June Reeves, says very loudly to her mommy, "Mommy, what's butt dust?" And the story says the church ended right there and a little child shall lead them, right? Church was over at that point. So that notion that we are dust, we are unworthy, is not necessarily resonant with me, and it's not part of our teaching here at Mile High Church. We have what I think is invitations into what I'm calling today functional worship. The invitation into a worship that knows that we're accountable and responsible for the rediscovery and the reactivation on a continual basis of that which calls us to our holy awareness. And therefore, we worship the nature of God in its most close and intimate form. And it starts with worship of us. Of us, ourself. Not in an ego way like, I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's a worship of our beingness. And this goes often absolutely against what we've been told and taught. because we've been taught not to be selfish, not to be egotistical, not to be so focused on ourselves, not to place our needs before other people, to be generous. But there's a centered place within this kind of worship that has to do with honoring myself and acknowledging that I am responsible for returning myself to myself. That if I've gone astray, if I've lost my sense of worship, if I'm disconnected and feeling that my worship circuit is having a hard time being activated, that I start often by asking, how am I not honoring myself? And there are ways that I can then honor myself, asking throughout the day, what would I need right now to return myself to me and to activate that circuit of worship? Because it's not just on Sundays, and it's not just when we're in a spiritual setting or having a spiritual conversation. It's an ongoing invitation. And some of us can feel it. I bet we're thinking of ways we do that now. We may go out into the sunshine and place our face into the warmth of the sun. We may just take a moment and take a deep breath. Have a minute of silence. Just be still. It might be that we do a little prayer, or we call the prayer and care center, or call here for prayer, or someplace where we get prayers. I was listening to a brief video from Simon Sinek's podcast, and he was talking about 8 minutes, and that sometimes it's about phoning someone whom we know loves us and sees who we really are and saying, could I please just have 8 minutes? And Simon suggests that if we can find someone who can just be present with us for 8 minutes, that we are helped if we're in struggle or we're feeling disconnected. And he suggests that we actually start texting each other, do you have 8 minutes, as a signal to say, I just need to be reminded and be reflected back about who I am and the truth of myself. And I think that phoning a friend is a very valid option to helping us return ourselves back to center, activating that worship circuit. And then, of course, we can't forget about God. God as this presence that we can remind ourselves of. All the prayers and meditations and things that we do here help us to reconnect to source. But my final question for us today is, what does it mean to worship God in a teaching of oneness? Because we don't need to. There's no God out there that's going, okay, you get extra points because you went to church every Sunday, right? Yeah. There's no God out there that's rewarding you every time you pray or meditate or do one of these things. It's not for God. Why not? Give me that name tag. No, just kidding. There's this opportunity that we have to really return to that presence within us over and over again with all the things I'm talking about, with going to church, with praying and meditating, with music, beautiful music, Denise's worship music that helps us to return ourselves to that place and space that reminds us of the truth. And I love that Reverend Zamira has brought us back kirtan here at Mile High Church, chanting and singing and just being in that ecstatic sense of connectedness. Nature, art, these things that when we take time to be sure they are part of our experience on a regular basis, lead us back into the true nature of ourselves. And that probably is the greatest challenge of our modern era. We feel that intention. We feel that calling. We feel that desire. But many of us will say to ourselves, I just don't have time. I don't have time to stop for 1 minute and have some silence. I don't have time to take care of myself. I've got all these other things I got to take care of. And we're missing it. And we're feeling empty and disconnected and wondering why. We are a part of our own answer, of our own worship circuit. And I'll close today with a beautiful phrase, a beautiful quote that Reverend Zemira brought to our ministerial team last week in our meeting by Hildegard of Bingen, the great mystic. It is, "Let us be an alive, burning offering before the altar of God. Let us be an alive, burning offering before the altar of God." To me, that means that every time we activate this worship circuit, something true, real, godly burns alive in us.
Thanks for listening to the Mile High Church podcast. This podcast is made possible by the generous contributions from listeners like you. To make a donation, please visit milehighchurch.org.